That was NFL veteran Kermit Alexander speaking with Only a Game's Karen Given. Some of the themes in Alexander's story, death penalty politics and the psychology of guilt after great loss, stretch beyond the scope of this radio program. But the question of whether a sports mentor can actually turn things around for young athletes like Tyquan Cox is a topic that's solidly in Only a Game's wheelhouse. And Edgework Consulting's Lou Burkholz and Boston University's John McCarthy are here to help answer that question. Lou and John, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Lou, Kermit Alexander described seeing a child who was angry, who couldn't control his emotions. You have worked with school children in war-torn countries, U.S. inner cities, and even at Sandy Hook Elementary School. What do you think when you witness a child acting out in that way?
For a long time, I always saw behavior as just behavior. And in the last 10 years, with all the research and work we've done with kids affected by trauma and seeing how behavior manifests and where it comes from, the new mantra I live by is that behavior tells a story. And the more complex, the more confusing, the more aggressive, the more confounding the behavior, the more there's something going on underneath it. It's a radical shift in approach and empathy to see that that behavior is potentially that child's best effort.
John, you train coaches, but of course coaches aren't psychiatrists. How do you prepare them to deal with the sort of issues that we're talking about here, assuming that these are issues with which coaches should be dealing?
I think one of the biggest things is really trying to figure out that kid's story and learn more about who they are and who surrounds them, and really trying to figure out how to individualize your coaching to that young person.
So it's let me try and figure out who you are rather than you're here, let me fit you into this idea, this concept, this team that I already know what I want.
And that's a big problem. And, you know, we have this ESPN version of reality that, you know, the coach is this driver and they create this culture and you must fall lockstep into working with them. But really working with children and young adults, it doesn't really work that way. They are trying to figure out who they are, and a lot of what we try to do is to learn their story and hopefully in a good situation, you know, have them write a little better story for themselves.
Lou, during the sentencing phase of his trial, Cox's lawyers presented evidence that he was suffering from PTSD. How common is that condition among inner city kids? And we're talking about kids who haven't been in the military, so that is what people might associate PTSD with.
So this is a fascinating full circle around another NPR story that was on This American Life a few years ago, and they were theming around doppelgangers. And basically, it was a story that compared soldiers coming back from active duty with kids in inner cities. The same biological changes were going on in both of them, and that actually the kids in inner cities potentially were worse off because the soldiers leaving these war-torn areas were leaving the physical location. And mm-hmm. So they were coming back with a level of trauma, but into generally communities and areas and families that had some level of stability. And in actuality, a lot of the kids that are living in urban areas, there's nowhere to go. And the re-traumatizing aspects of that is incredible.
You seemed to suggest a moment ago that we know more about this whole condition than we did 10 or 20 years ago. Is that more or less correct?
I think the changes in how people look at kids and behavior and trauma that are dramatic. And a lot of it has to do with the advances in neuroscience and understanding that trauma resides not just in an event that happened in the past, but in the brain, and it's held in the body. There's a lot of studies that reveal this, that the things that happen to us as kids, they stick. And the younger they happen and the more extreme they are, the more profound. And it's not just acute trauma. It's not just these very intense circumstances. It adds up at the same impact that it might for someone that suffers something much more acutely severe.
Well, John, let's talk about how coaches and how sports can address these kinds of problems. Is a basketball team or a football team a better place, a more effective place to address this sort of thing than, say, a theater class or a chess team?
I think so, Bill. I think one of the things that sport and physical activity have is that physiological involvement. Using physical activity, it helps us relax, right? On a good day, if we work out, we feel better at the end of the day. But imagine a kid who's got to walk through gang territory or face difficulty every single day. Their need for it is, I think, actually much greater.
We're talking about all sorts of potentially positive outcomes here. let's go back to the Kermit Alexander story for just a minute. If he had done something about the young man that he saw was in trouble, his anger was out of control, all the rest of it, there's no guarantee that things would have turned out differently. There's no guarantee he would have succeeded. How do mentors in general deal with the failures?
Well, there's always going to be failure because we don't actually know our reach sometimes. But we also know that if we can shift a kid in a more positive direction, you know, the safety net that they have for themselves might be better. They might be farther from doing some real harm to themselves or others.
As I'm listening to this, Lou, I'm getting this sense of little tiny steps, not necessarily great, fantastic achievements, right?
And the steps might take years. The sport context is really special in many ways, and it's not going to achieve all things for all kids, but it is about trying to keep that kid for one more hour, for one more day, for one more season, knowing that the progress could be dramatically slow and backwards for half the time. Mm. But that staying there by itself is a stabilizing experience.
So often with sports programs, people are used to hearing stories about kids who were saved from poverty and terrible circumstances by the pro contract that they're going to pursue somewhere down the line in the NBA or the NFL. We're not talking about those kids, right? We're talking about, like you say, the kid who can be convinced to come back the next day, to stay in school maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a false notion for 99.9% of the kids that are involved in sport. And it's actually, I think, damaging because we hold out this carrot that's really not achievable, especially today for some of the kids who come from meager resources. It's really hard for them to get there.
There's a time and a place to be inspired and to see yourself in a bigger-than-life situation, to think that you can make it. But to make it is to, in the words of one of the groups that we get to work with at Edgework, is about really fundamental stuff. It's getting to adulthood alive in stable job, stable housing, stable relationships. And that is so unexciting, except that's surviving adolescence. It's surviving tough environments. It's getting through the most vulnerable age groups, especially for young men between 16 and 26 and 16 and 28. And you need someone that is around. And the role models actually for those kids are young adults who made it from that community and are there doing the work.
Well, John, you have spoken about that yes, the coach can be a role model, the coach can be a mentor, but some of the most effective mentors are teammates or guys who've just finished with the program and come back and help out.
You know, one kid right now is coaching the football team. So he was a kid from Puerto Rico, didn't speak any English when he first came in, and now he's made this great transition to a real mentoring role. And he's from the community, so he's the real deal. He can speak Spanish to the kids. He can do things that I could never do.
Yeah. You know, we put a lot of pressure on coaches to be the mentor, to be the role model. And if you look at a lot of the research, where kids get their most support besides potentially whatever their family situation is from peers, especially as they head into adolescence. And my wish would be that every coach spent more time making sure that every kid that joined a team, a sports experience, actually made friends. And if every kid could leave their team experience or their sport experience with a real friend, you're building a protective mechanism that could last forever. We don't need 100 friends. We need a couple people that look out for us. When we think about the kids that are most vulnerable, most on the fringe, and where and when they're going to make those really complicated, potentially life or death situations, it's not going to be at home. It's not going to be in school. It's going to be on the weekend, midnight somewhere, and the only other people around are their friends. And you could potentially save a lot of lives.
And you hope that in that situation, the voice of that best friend or that assistant coach or that mentor is in that kid's head, even if the person isn't present.
Yeah. That coach's voice.
My guests have been Edgework Consulting's Lou Burkholz and Boston University's John McCarthy. They both help train organizations and coaches to promote youth development through sports. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.